Hey, it's Julian from the Black Light Podcast. Continuing with our Spotlight series, I had a chance to sit down with Jason. Jason and I have known each other for quite a few years now. It was great to talk to him about our similarities and our differences. We had a great time chopping it up, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Now let's get into it. Oh, I'm so serious.
Let's get into this ass.
Let's get all up in this ass. Mr. Jason Lewis, how you feeling?
I'm doing well.
You good?
Julian.
Good. Good.
Ready right. to get into this. I'm slightly nervous.
But no, be nervous. Definitely be nervous.
Okay.
All but right. we're gonna grow. We're gonna grow together. Don't worry about that, man.
All right.
One of the things that I think a lot of people talk about when they talk about the Black Light Podcast is the fact that we have this this group, I guess, this energy and this chemistry together. Talk a little bit about your connection to the group, how you met all of us.
Oh boy. Okay. So, I guess it was 2008 or seven. I worked for the federal government. I had a job here in the DMV area. Didn't know a soul. And I was dating this girl at the time, and she was sort of kicking it with Julian. So I met Julian a couple of times, but you know, you kind of brushed me off. It's like, I have enough friends. But it wasn't until I met him like a third or fourth time, and I met Julian, another friend of ours, Nate, and Sheldon, as you guys all know, is another member of the Black Light Podcast. So that's when some of this started to come together. We met at a house party, and we bonded over Virginia Beach. They had just came from Virginia Beach or just had a trip there that they go to all the time. And it, you know, we were just bonding over that, talking about how fun it was and all that stuff. And we just started having a friendship from there. I actually met my wife through these clowns. I went to a happy hour, and I met this beautiful goddess who is now my wife. I met her through them, and actually Sheldon is the one that sort of kind of pulls some of the strings to get us together. So, I owe these guys a lot. Really, my marriage and my kids, sort of.
Right.
And I met Warren he's Julian's cousin, so he was around a lot. And, you know, I just met him that way. But it wasn't until more recent years that me and him kind of became friends a little bit before this podcast. So that's how that was how Voltron first merged.
Was there anything in particular that made you think like, yo, you know what, these dudes are real ones? Like,
well, shit, I didn't have any friends, so it was okay. It was either you or nothing, hanging out by myself. No, we just bonded really fast. I think I kind of with this group, I think I kind of found my tribe, which I never felt. I found, like, have a lot of different friends, but not like a consistent group, except for like sort of one group, Freak Squad. We just hit it off right off the bat. And again, I found my wife in this group. It's a multicultural group, which I really in the past haven't really been a part of. So I really like the aspect of it. Of the group's dynamic. We just kid around a lot. We joke around, tell really stupid, inappropriate jokes. We just laugh a lot. So yeah, that's, I don't know. With this group, I felt like I finally found my tribe. It's like, if I was in college, this is the group that I probably want to have levitated towards, a group like this. So.
Now, you mentioned about your job, saying you work for the federal government. And I know that I've spoken with you in the past about it, and you've probably explained to me exactly what it is that you do. But I think it's kind of like Tommy from Martin, right? Like, nobody really knows what you do. So describe Well, first of all, I guess describe your educational background and what your current job is.
Well, I'll answer the last question first. I'm an assassin. I chop heads off for a living. And I really can't tell you any, no, I'm just kidding.
Chopping heads like Wu-Tang. Okay.
I work, I don't know if I want to say I'll say it. I work for the FDA.
Ooh,
I'm not in any way representing the FDA in this podcast. So what I'm just telling you, who I work for, cause I have to. And my education background is that I went to a historically black college, Norfolk State, Behold the Grinning Gull. And I was a mass comm major and I was focused more towards a thought I wanted to do a career in sort of like being a newscaster. That was the first thing that kind of meant like, oh, that'd be kind of a cool job. And then I was like, I don't know if I really want to do that. And then towards my senior year, I worked at a radio station at my college. It was an FM radio station, Hot 91, your favorite station. They just call something different now, Blazing Hot 91.1. But yeah, I was I started out as a like a board op, kind of doing commercials. Well, we really didn't have commercials. It was more of because college radio can't have commercials, but they were called spots. They were really commercials. Mm-hmm. And then you would just cut those up. And then I finessed my way on air. I was a part of this morning show, the 911 Dispatch. I think, yeah, what we recall was my radio name was Iceberg Slim. Mm-hmm. So my name was Iceberg Slim. The other host of it was Nino Brown and Miss T. And we were supposed to do like this black movie motif, but it didn't quite work out. But yeah, so I started doing that towards my senior year. It seemed that whole career field seemed more like a gamble. And just talking stuff over with my dad, and he was, you know, he sort of hinted that he's like, oh, you might want to pick something a little bit more stable. For some reason that just really stuck with me. I'm like, shit, yeah. you know, because it didn't seem like a clear career path. So I started to venture out. I thought about law school. I got accepted to a law school. Ended up not going because I didn't know how I was going to financially support myself. Because I couldn't, some law schools, you can't have a job your first year. So I was kind of going back and forth. So I decided to just chill out for a year, worked it as a collector at Bank of America, where I got cursed out and called nigger for a living. And
cool.
That was fun. Yeah. No, I met some great people. like not on the phone, but, you know, coworkers. And went to grad school, got my master's in public administration. I've always had a passion for politics, but again, that seemed kind of like shaky. So I wanted something a little bit more concrete. So I was like, hey, I can work for the government. It's kind of a little bit of politics, a little bit more concrete, something stable. And I've been working for the government since 2007. So that was my career path.
So,
and that's kind of come full circle with this podcast.
Yeah. A little bit. You know, and there's a lot of things that you said that I definitely want to follow up on.
Yeah.
But sticking with your current job right now. So then how did you go from being a mass comm major and then getting to the role that you have now?
It was kind of, you know, when you're in your 20s, you're just trying to get something stable. So that was like, hey, I'm, you know, getting up here. I want something that is, I want something that's stable. Your question was what?
Say, like, how did you transition? I guess I know the conversation you said that you had with your father, just in terms of looking for other things. But, you know, in terms of transitioning from a mass comm major and with all your other work experience, how did you get into what it is that you do now?
It was just basically I really I was looking for something more stable, and I wanted something that I was interested in. I didn't want to be a broker or anything. I wanted to do something that was attached to something I cared about. So I was trying a lot of different things and saw what stick. One thing I wanted to do was join the FBI.
Ooh.
But at the time they, weren't hiring for, they hire for certain specialties, like, you know, foreign language, chemistry, stuff like that. I didn't have any of that. So one thing they were looking for was, police experience. So I was like, hey, I'll be a policeman. Right after grad school, I went to, I applied to two, police departments, Virginia Beach Police Department in Atlanta, and got in with both of them. I had to do all this gnarly shit, like jump through windows and go through this obstacle course. Probably one of the hardest things I ever had to do, but, passed, you know, physical part of it and the other parts of it. You have to take a lie detector test.
Ooh.
Which is really scary. They just strapped this machine. I remember when they strapped me to this machine, you know, they like hook all this shit up to you and they ask you a bunch of questions before they go to like the real part of it. And they was like, okay, we got to stop this because you're nervous. I'm like, I got a fucking machine strapped to me. I have a, you know, person that specializes in seeing if people lie or not right here. Of course I'm nervous. So anyway, calm down. And did that. But yeah, and so I took a job in with the Atlanta Police Department, and I was bored shitless. It's not something that I really wanted to do. And I definitely didn't want to get shot. That's a
common goal that people have.
Yeah, yeah, so. Like I don't want to be shot. I was, you know, so I had just graduated Old Dominion University. That's where I got my degree in public administration.
Okay.
So I was sort of looking at things I want to do. So I put out a bunch of resumes and applied for a couple different things. And finally, I got a call back for this internship. So I told my lieutenant at the time, my mom was sick or something. I lied.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, by the time they called me back, I was in actual police academy. So it's like the real deal. Like we were like, you know, we had to box. I missed this, but we had to be pepper sprayed, all this shit. Like really fun shit to do that you want to do right after grad school.
Yeah.
So I went back home, got the job, and then, you know, I put in my 2 weeks notice. It was really sort of difficult because when you're in something like a police department, it's very fraternal thing, and you know, we were sort of all in it together. You know, we were the, you know, me. It was in Atlanta, so I didn't really know anybody there. So these were like my only friends there, and then I almost felt like I let them down because I didn't complete it because it was 50 of us, right. So many of us. But you know, it was fine. It worked out really well.
That's good.
Yeah. So then I've been with the government. I worked for the Department of Defense for a couple of years. I worked for DHS before they went to shit. And now I work for the FDA.
Okay. Now, before we transition into something else, what would you say is the most rewarding part of your job now?
The most rewarding part of my job, honestly, is something that I got to do the last basically year pre-COVID. I was a supervisor for a group out in California, and I was their supervisor at group of admin. And the most satisfying part is just working with other people, trying to get them to like the next level, make them realize that they can accomplish more than they're accomplishing, and just working with people. A second part of that job, which was awesome, was hiring, taking part in a hiring panel. Because I, in general, I do pretty good on interviews, but I've heard people bomb on interviews. So helping people to kind of navigate that and just putting good people in good position and just being a voice of people who may not be the first choice, you know, just kind of putting that other voice in the room there. So that's been extremely rewarding. And just, I love working with people and bringing them up. I have a different view of leadership than I think some people do. I don't see it as just like, okay, you're going to get, you know, you're going to take these widgets and produce this, and that's all I want to hear. You're going to do what I say. I like working with people more and getting them to kind of come along, not telling them what to do or anything like that. I mean, sometimes you have to do that, Mm-hmm. You know, you still got to come to work. You still got to, you know, you still have tasks to do, but getting people to do a work like all the time and wanting to do it and putting them in a good position, getting them mentoring, getting them coaching, getting them training. Oh, I really enjoy that aspect of the job. Right. So that's been the most fulfilling thing I've done at FDA.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I took a training course that was about a year. It was a leadership development class. And it taught me so much, you know, just kind of preconceived notions I had about leadership. Because I didn't know if I was like fit to be a leader in FDA. But after taking that course, I was like, oh, well, okay, if this is a leader. Yeah, I'm definitely that thing. So.
Oh, that's good. That's good. It's inspiring to hear that you're able to find that enjoyment in what you do. I know, obviously, a lot of people can be in situations where, yo, we're just here going through the motions, kind of mailing it in.
Oh, it sounds like I've been there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people can relate to that experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you talked about it earlier, and in terms of education, once again, you went to Norfolk State University. And, you know, for those who are listening to Black Light Podcast, Jason may have mentioned it on some of the episodes, but you are the only member of the podcast that attended an HBCU. And I know you talked a little bit about your experience on the air, and you're no stranger to a microphone, but I want to know a little bit more about what your experience was like at an HBCU.
So my experience was a little bit different from what you would find like a stereotypical HBCU experience, simply because the HBCU that I went to, Norfolk State University, actually my mom graduated from there, my dad graduated from there, so did and two of my aunts went there. So sort of had a little legacy thing going there. Plus my mom worked there basically my entire life. So ever since I was like two, I've been going to Norfolk State football games, Norfolk State basketball games, MEAC tournaments. Like, so by the time I actually went to Norfolk State, I wasn't as excited as like most people. Like, maybe they haven't experienced that, because I'm like, I've been doing this shit for like 20 years, yeah. You know.
You knew where everything was.
Yeah, honestly. And I knew everybody at literally everybody on campus. Yeah. The staff knew me because they knew me as a little boy.
So you couldn't mess up.
I couldn't do shit. So I had to go to Old Dominion to do shit. But yeah, so it was also that. And I was a commuting student. I did stay on campus my first year. But my mom pulled some strings. I was able to go to like the nicer dorm, which was sort of good, but sort of bad, because it was mostly juniors and seniors who had already bonded. They had already. So I wasn't with the freshmen. You know, I was in a dorm. So I didn't make a great deal of friends when I was there. I made some, you know, especially when I started getting more involved with the radio station and stuff like that. But I didn't know a whole lot of people. So it was a little bit different. It was college for me at Norfolk State was more like finding myself, like what I was passionate about. You know, I was super serious, super focused on doing something, even if I didn't know what that was. And I've always been sort of kind of high strung. So, I mean, but believe me, I had a great time. I went to, you know, hella college parties, web jams, people from back home will know these terms, sweat boxes. Oh my God. Sweat boxes were these dances that we used to have in the old gym that was just like super musty and no air conditioning, no ventilation. The football players would come and it'd be musty and shit. Like it was nasty, but it was so much fun. But yeah, so I mean, and I wasn't in the band or anything. That's where a lot of people kind of found the calling, their group of friends or fraternities. I didn't join that either. So I was kind of a floater. I had people that I knew, but I didn't have like the dynasty, like a group of friends that I just, and plus I'm from the area. So I mean, most of my high school friends were right there, you know, most of them went to school or didn't go to school. So I still had a group of friends I can hang out with, but not a lot of college friends. So my college experience was a little bit different, those aspects.
All right. So sticking in staying in that same vein, talking about you being from around the area, Norfolk State, tell me a little bit about where you're from and what life was growing up. for you?
P-Town, of course. P-Town? I mean, I grew up in P-Town, but a lot of people like you are the most un-P-Town like person ever. Like I've said a couple times on the show, I'd say P-Town is the equivalent for DMV people to maybe like Southeast DC light, you know, ain't that bad, but it's, you know, it's a little rough.
I'm sorry, I was just trying to pick one of them wire cities,
but but it was what you would call a somewhat rough neighborhood, but not, I mean, it wasn't, it was very community oriented neighborhood. We had a section in Portsmouth that was very Cavalry Manor, Crystal Lakes area that was very you know, middle class neighborhood, upper middle class neighborhood. So it was a great blending of different type of black people mostly. So it was you know, very, very proud tradition, very segregated. A very racial history. There was a black side of Portsmouth and a white side of Portsmouth. And some of those sentiments are certainly still in Portsmouth, which I didn't even realize because I don't even remember that many black people in Portsmouth, other than Churchland area. So I grew up in a very loving neighborhood. Had a great childhood. I was raised by my mom, primarily. My dad was around. He was there. He wasn't necessarily a deadbeat. I guess. Yeah. he was on the verge. He was on the verge of being a deadbeat at some time.
A barely alive beat.
Right. But yeah, it was I would say I had a great childhood. But you know, there were certainly things that, you know, shaped you. But my community, I'm very much a product of my mom's upbringing. Mm-hmm. The activism is very much like my mom's side and influence on me, and the more thoughtful, analytical side is probably more so my dad.
Really?
But yeah, I owe a lot to how I am to my mom. You know, it was just me and her for a very long time. And my grandmother, who helped to raise me as well, took care of me every day. When I got off the bus, she would have a dinner for me,
a hot plate.
And then I would eat again when my mom got home. She worked, she worked in Norfolk State. And she, a lot of times she worked two jobs. She also got her master's. She worked her ass off. So I owe a lot of that thinking to her. And I had a great example. A lot of people, neighborhood that I grew up in did not have that example. Some of them turned out great. Like I think of one of my best friends, Jamal, who certainly did not have any of that rosy scenario, but he was able to accomplish so much. And that's why, you know, I have a special place in my heart for people who struggle. Cause I mean, that's mostly what I grew up around, with people that were struggling. Well,
yeah. I mean, it's great to have that example. And I know a lot of people are able to find inspiration off of hearing examples like that. I want to dig a little bit deeper, talking about the relationship that you have with your mother. I know whenever I would talk to you, you know, in the past, you definitely think very high of your mother. So I just want to have a chance to ask you about how you would describe your relationship with your mom.
Yeah, well, you know, like most relationships, good ones, it's complicated. We do have a great relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm an only child, and there are a lot of stereotypes that go along with being an only child. A lot of those are true. And just how you're raised and just how you think about the world and your imagination, you know, for example, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Our relationship is good. I love my mom dearly. She says crazy shit all the time now because she's old and she could get away with stuff. So we do have a hard time in that aspect, especially when it comes to children or if it comes to my wife. You know, I'm very protective of my wife and I'm very protective of my mom. So sometimes that and conflicts. but I would say our relationship is great, but complicated because, you know, when you are an only child, and you basically grew up as an only child. Yep, I mean, you may feel this way, but you have a different relationship because it's just you and her. So a lot of times it is definitely mother-son relationship, but sometimes it's more like a friendship. And the older I get, I almost feel like I'm her husband.
Oh, wow.
Like the way that we talk, because my mom's a very strong woman and opinionated. And in order to properly communicate with my mom, you have to be a very strong person, or she will walk the fuck over you.
Oh, wow.
In the most Southern, pleasant, Southern Belle type of way. Bless your heart. But, you know, our relationship is complicated, but I love my mom. She's my inspiration for pretty much everything I do. I owe majority of how I turned out to her. So,
yeah. No, it's funny you bring that up because we actually have a guest today joining us. And, no, I'm just kidding. We don't have.
How dare you say that about me?
No, but
the vapors.
Yeah. No. Well, thanks for sharing that. Yeah. It's great to have an insight on the way people's relationships are. I want to transition, you know, still about your childhood, but maybe just a little bit more of the fun stuff. So,
okay.
Like, what TV shows did you grow up watching?
Oh shit. Well, first of all, I love cartoons. So Saturday mornings.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. NBC. Oh my god. Bionic 6. I'm gonna take y'all way back because I'm old. I'm 40. Bionic 6, and then get it like Ninja Turtles, Thundercats. Silverhawks, like He-Man, like, yo, those are my favorite cartoons. And then as I got older, I would say the Cosby Show's pre, you know, everything. Different World changed my life and you know, showed how awesome HBCU life would be and how cool different Black people are. And yeah, those are Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, just shows like that, you know. Those are some of my favorite shows growing up.
Okay. Now what about music?
Oh, sorry. Also, Golden Girls is the best fucking show.
I'm not even gonna lie about that, man.
Like Rose, Dorothy, Blank. Yeah. Dorothy, how can you not love these people? It's the best show ever. Like, no show will ever touch that. Maybe Watchmen, because that's a great show. But other than Watchmen, Golden Girls has to be, like, right under it. Yeah. Great show.
Yeah.
It came on Saturday night. Like, you remember the lineup? It used to be 227. It was, like, the Black shows first. Like, 227 was another show. Like, Facts of Life had Tootie up there. And then Golden Girls and Empty Nest.
Emptiness.
You remember, right?
Wow.
Yeah. I was an 80s kid, man. Wow. Like,
it was just me and my mom. Right. You were definitely.
We didn't have cable that, you know, we didn't have cable until much later. So it was, you watch NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox all the time.
Yeah.
Married with Children, another great show.
Yeah. See, wow. Yeah. You like took me all the way back.
Living Color, Martin. Come on. Absolutely. That's my sweet spot.
Absolutely. So what about music? What did you listen to growing up?
Oh, well, so I was a big kid, so I didn't really start listening to, and I didn't have any like older cousins, except for my cousin Tanya, but she was a girl, like, I'm like, she actually introduced me to my first rap record, which was Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Parents That Just Don't Understand,
which is
my first rap album I actually liked.
Yeah.
So that set it off for me. And I even remember coloring in a breakdancing coloring book. But so she introduced me to rap, Tanya. And but when I had more refined taste, when I was 14, I started listening. I snuck and got Snoop Dogg's album. It was like back in the day when you did those, you get like 12 CDs for like 8 cents.
Yep.
But
yep,
you had to
Columbia
buy one.
House joint. Yep.
Yeah. So the first one I remember getting was, I don't know how this got past my mom, because she was pretty good at censoring stuff I listened to, but I got Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style.
Yeah.
Changed my life. And no way should I have been listening to that shit at 14. It just took my innocence and just like, how you can, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, so that kind of started me. And then, you know, as you get older, you start to listen to friends, listen to Biggie Smalls is still one of Notorious B.I.G. Mm-hmm. is one of my favorite artists of all times, next to Jay-Z. Yeah. So I listened to that. I wasn't I call it like an indie rap fan. You know what I'm saying? Like I didn't listen to like the Beatnuts or whatever like that. I was still to this day a pretty sort of mainstream hip hop consumer. So, you know, it was and really big in Portsmouth and in Virginia, it was real heavy, was the Wu-Tang Clan. That just changed society in Portsmouth. Like you would get beat up if you didn't listen to, if you weren't able to quote 36 Chambers. like it was so serious, you know, and everybody that came spawned out of the Wu-Tang Clan. So that was like a big, like you would get your ass beat if you didn't know. one of their songs. So, but that's what I grew up listening to. Most like New York influenced hip hop artists, you know, East Coast. You know, I wasn't too much into Tupac and all that. And Snoop Dogg, right. He was an exception. And N.W.A. That was a little bit before my time, but my beginning in hip hop was Biggie Small, Jay-Z, East Coast artists.
So in the same,
everybody that Suge Knight was trying to kill.
So sticking with pop culture and things that you enjoyed growing up, one of the things I love about you is the fact that you're so passionate. And if you guys can see the set, you can see that we have the little the Funko, the pops of
so nerdy
superheroes. But your love for comic books.
Yeah.
And I can't think of very many people who, first of all, were black, but also, you know, feel, you know, black.
We're out there.
People who feel the way that you do about comic books.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about how your love for comic books started.
Well, I did talk about this on one of our podcasts, which is available on major podcast platforms. But plug. But it started with my mom buying me a Superman comic book when Superman died. It was a graphic novel, which again is a collection of six or seven comic books in one little book. And Superman died. I was like, oh shit, like Superman can't die. But he can. But he came back to life, of course. So that started me reading comic books and really getting into it. And I was maybe about 13. I didn't end up reading it when I was younger than that. I thought it was stupid. Same thing with wrestling. Like when I was a kid, I was like, no, this is dumb. Like it's fake. But you know, I've become an adult. Like this is the coolest thing ever. So comic books was kind of in the same vein, and I just really got into it. It was like my own, like sort of thing that not a lot of people were into. So to me, it made it really cool. Made me feel, you know, special. and they were just fucking good stories. And I just thought they were always really cool ways to tell a story in a way that wasn't preachy, that you could like, all right, yeah, you shouldn't treat this group of people like that. So it was just cool. Like, you know, I wasn't playing with toys, but I could read comic books. So it's kind of the same thing. So that's how my love of comic books started. And as I progressed, I started reading more and more comic books and did a little bit of research, see what the good ones were. And started reading those, and then just progressed from there. Yeah.
So now, if somebody wanted to start following comic books, which series would you recommend and why?
The Dark Knight Returns, because it's pretty mainstream. There's basically a movie based on it, Batman and Superman. Most people who hated that movie didn't read the graphic novel, because if they read the graphic novel, it would be like, oh shit, this is, but it's a good introduction. It was one of the first like mainstream comic books that tackled more heavier issues. Authoritarianism and just what it means to be a superhero, what it is to have like this. Kind of the things that we're going through now is just like police presence, who watches the watchmen, like who are these people that are supposed to be guarding us? What, suppose they're corrupt, or suppose they're don't have our best interests at heart? Like what happens then? Who watches them? Who's watching them? Who's policing them? So To me, that's a great starting point for any comic book fans. And it has Superman in it, has Batman in it. So it has characters that you're familiar with, but it kind of flips on its head because the story is like Batman's like this old 6-year-old dude, like he's bitter, he's like broken down, and he's got one more fight left in him. He's gonna beat Superman's ass, who's basically a puppet of Ronald Reagan. It's crazy. It's crazy. Like y'all, I highly recommend that. Okay. That concept as a starting point.
I'll keep an eye out for that. Yeah. Now you mentioned it earlier, and I definitely would feel, definitely would be remiss if I didn't mention this. But one of the ways that we've actually bonded over the years is for our love of pro wrestling.
wrestling.
Yes, wrestling. So I want to talk briefly about what are your earliest memories of pro wrestling and what got you hooked.
Oh God. Well, like I said, when I was younger, I thought it was the stupidest thing. Like when Hogan and Ultimate Warrior, all that shit, I was like, man, I figured out pretty early, like it was fake. But then I started giving it a second chance around the same time I was interested in comic books. I'm like, oh, it's supposed to be fake. Okay, it's like a movie. Mm-hmm. Like these are characters. Oh, it's not so stupid now. I mean, it is stupid. Don't get me wrong. It's stupid, but it's like goofy stupid where you don't even have to think. Like it's, you know, the storylines are really simple.
Yeah.
Good, bad, you know, it's a little plot twist. Like, oh, snap. It's the fun of it. It's like you're in this ecosystem that nothing else exists around it. And mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, I can relax my brain for a little bit. You know, it's good for people who are, you know, have anxiety or really super serious about other things. You're like, oh, this is so good. You can be engulfed in this fake sport and just kind of lose yourself. And, you know, what kind of got me into it was, again, I guess it was sort of the same thing with Superman. It was like Hulk Hogan, who's like the baby face, the good guy, for layman terms. And he turned bad. Like, wait, this is against the principles of wrestling. And it was so, you know, and after a while you start cheering for him. You're like, oh, I get it. Like mm-hmm. it wasn't until Hulk Hogan turned bad. Now he's a real bad guy in real life now, but you know, in that universe, he was bad. And it started becoming kind of cool. And then it eventually became mainstream with The Rock and Stone Cold and DX. But I was still sort of a closeted wrestling fan,
right?
Because it was cool, but not like Portsmouth, Urban cool. You know, it hadn't quite reached that mark until like 2002, when everybody was like, "This is the greatest thing ever." So you know, it was I definitely had my wrestling friends who I talk wrestling with. But if a girl or somebody else came around, I would talk about something else. Like,
go ahead with that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and go to Fines and get me this this boss outfit, this cross color outfit. You know, I would switch up completely. But I was I was embarrassed about being a wrestling fan, and still am.
real quick.
Yes.
Favorite match of all time.
Oh. That would have to be not from a technical standpoint, but just from a holy shit standpoint, The Rock versus Hogan.
Oh, okay.
And WrestleMania 19 is a lot more. I'm really bad with numbers. What WrestleMania was
it? I think it was 18 or
18,
20.
18, yeah. So that was my favorite match. I just, between that one and because it was the first WrestleMania I purchased, Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold Steve Austin with Mike Tyson. Oh, it was the first match. I was like, I feel every part of the match. Like Shawn Michaels, it was so amazing. It was like everything that, you know, it's like that match, I became smart. You know, I was like, oh, this is like so many things were ticking. Like what Shawn Michaels was trying to do, what Stone Cold was trying to do, you know, the way that they just pull the audience in and just like manipulate them and just it gets to the zenith and you just explode. Like it was amazing. That was the first match of like, I get this, and I became a lifelong fan.
Awesome. Awesome. So now we want to move into some of the more serious part, but also something to smile about, right?
Okay.
Talk about relationships. And now, you know, I love talking about this. So
what is cheating? I don't know, Julian.
No, we're not going to go that hard.
Okay,
that's for Black Light After Hours. but now you mentioned her earlier, and I definitely wanted to make sure to to talk about it. Uh-huh. But you mentioned when you were out with us and then you met your now wife.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your first date with her.
Oh, Lord. See, you're going to get me in trouble. I want to say the first date, and I'm pretty sure about this, was it was a spot in Georgia Brown. That's in DC, and it's like a soul food. It's like a it's like a fancy soul food restaurant. Yeah. And Jennifer makes fun of me because she's like, I was wearing this like awkward like sweater thing. I don't know. She was like, something was like just off. I think it was like too big. Like it was in between the styles of like wearing baggy stuff and not so baggy stuff. Now it's, you know, the opposite tight stuff. But yeah, we just had a great conversation. I was already kind of digging her the first time we talked, and we talked over the phone. So this was just like, okay, I hope it goes well. And it went well. Like, I like her. Like she's.
I'm so glad you dropped that.
That's they make fun of me because I you know, when I get excited, my voice goes really high, and that's one of my catchphrases, according to these guys. So
according to history.
But yeah, but yeah, we just vibe really well. And, you know, we had similar views about what we wanted. I met her at a time where I was, you know, I had just gone through a really traumatic thing had happened. I didn't even tell you this, and I'm not going to tell you now, but I was sort of devastated from that. And she was like a guiding light out of that. I was just like so involved in this one situation that happened to me. And then it was just the right time, right person at the right time. And she was just like, everything just changed from that moment.
Mm, that's great. I mean, that's awesome to hear. Now, you are the only one on the podcast who is currently married.
Yes.
But there are other people on the podcast who are lined up to get married.
Like, yeah, so, a lot.
Yeah.
Damn and, COVID. I mean,
yeah, right. So it's no secret that within relationships, within marriages, there's, you know, you have happy times and you have challenging times. What would you say is the most challenging part about being a husband?
Oh, well, I say this all the time. Marriage is not for punks.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard. And everyone's relationship is different. People have different reasons they get married and stay married, and, you know, the reason they like each other, don't like each other, whatever. For us, it was the second and third year of our marriage was really rough, you know, and it's in that like, did I make the right decision? You know, she's kind of thinking the same thing. Like, God, we're arguing. I don't think we're supposed to be arguing this much. So it's, you know, you're trying to figure that out. I had never lived with a woman before, you know, that I was dating or period. So, you know, just figuring that out, being the only child, her being one of 14
goodness gracious.
Was a little different. And, you know, we dated, but I feel like you don't really get to meet the real person until like year two.
Oh, wow.
And that's around the time we got married.
Oh,
so
wow.
We met the real person because we were living. You can't, you know, like put a happy bow on everything all the time. So we went through a rocky time. What has helped us is, and I was talking to Warren about this the other day, is just like, you know, not every argument needs to be won. Some arguments can just be, I disagree with you a lot. It's not the end of the world. You're not Hitler because you disagree on this point. Now, there are some things that you can't get over. Or you can't, well, it's harder to get over. And as long as that person doesn't cross those things and you do the same, you're going to be okay. You're going to be fine. Like a lot of the stuff that we were fighting over, stupid, that we just wouldn't argue over, you know, 6-7 years in the game. So, you know, we've matured as people. We've learned to deal with conflict a lot better. And just, you know, we know when to kind of leave each other alone.
Yeah.
You know, when we are on edge or upset about something, and we understand each other. So you have more compassion for the person once you know them a little bit. Like, oh, yeah, they probably, okay, I'm gonna hold off a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Also, one of the fun parts of that often comes along with marriage is mm-hmm. the the role of becoming a father.
Mm-hmm.
You have three kids.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is the most fulfilling part just in general about being a father?
A good buddy of mine, Melvin, he just had a baby. And so we were just having this conversation. It's kind of like one of those things. It's like AC, like before Christ, you know, it's like everything. That's how I split my life. Like before kids, after kids, like, so I feel like a totally different person. To me, probably the biggest thing with kids is that they fulfill me. You know, I feel like that's my purpose and part of my purpose in life. Actually, it's funny. My son, 3 years ago or so, asked me, he was like, "Well, Dad, like, what's the purpose of life?"
Like, oh, wow.
I was like, wow. like, why are we here? Like, what, you know? And I was just like, I gave him a pretty dad standard answer, but it made me really think.
To do your chores, son.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to your mama, boy. But you know, the more I thought about it, and I did go back to him, I think it's just, I mean, to me, I feel like I'm put on this planet to make it better. And if you're not doing that, you're not doing your life's purpose. So, you know, it's about leaving a legacy. So my children will be a part of my legacy. So, you know, I'm going to put all my effort, time, energy into making sure that they are happy and successful. You know, that's whether, you know, my son or daughter becomes president or they have, you know, they work at fucking, they work somewhere else, right? It doesn't make a lot of money. I just want them to be happy and I want them to add to whoever life they are attached to, make improve their life. And I feel like that's you know, they've kind of helped me realize that, like, there's so much petty shit that we all kind of think about and do, and it doesn't really mean anything, you know. So you should be putting so much of a lot of your effort into improving what your community and whatever you consider your community is, whether that's the Black community, whether that's Virginia, whether that's Maryland, whether it's America, wherever you consider your community, improving it. So that is my life's mission. And that's what I've sort of been laser focused on.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's great. And I can imagine that definitely is a fulfilling part of the whole human experience. Is just, you know, when you have children and then you get to teach them, you get to watch them grow as people. I think that has to be really, really awesome. One of the things that you and I talk about, and I know that you're pretty involved in, is the whole, I guess, the political process. We talked a little bit before we started recording about just how interesting politics in general is for you. Mm-hmm. I know the election is coming up, mm-hmm. but within the past 12, maybe even really 14 years, we've really seen some unprecedented times, especially in this country, with changing administrations, being happy about one, maybe not so happy about a current one.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about what that period has been for you, let's say starting like 07, 08, and then your involvement, because I know you've done some campaigning for candidates before. So what has that been like for you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've always been interested in politics. It's just one of my kinks. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've just always been interested, really, from my mom. You know, she's always had the news on. So I just kind of picked some of that up. I've volunteered to work. Nothing incredible. As far as the amount of time I spent, but, you know, I've worked for the John Kerry campaign. That was, I think, the first time I actually volunteered. He lost, of course. And, you know, so that kind of got me interested in politics. And then with Barack Obama being potentially the first African-American president, shit, I dropped everything. And, you know, I volunteered, I canvassed, phone banked, anything. I did the same thing for Hillary Clinton. So, I mean, that's a small thing that I can do. I definitely plan to get more actively involved. But I look at politics a little bit differently than I did back in the, I call it my hope and change era. With the current administration, it's really helped me pull the cover over my from over my head and just realize what this country is and where it I thought it was is not exactly didn't jive up to my perception of what this country was and the people around me did not jive with reality. So in some aspects, y'all president, when he was elected, it was for me, it was a lightning rod thing. Like I need to get more. And it goes back to, you know, what your actual purpose is. Like what can I do so this shit never happens again? Or what can I do to be a better advocate for this issue? Because there's I'm not a one issue person. I care about a lot of things, like not one thing kind of oversees the other. So these issues that I care about, criminal justice reform and, you know, like these environmental issues, these issues, like what can I do in my small part to amplify that? Can I be more active on social media? Can I volunteer for a campaign? Can I just talk to the people around me, especially people that are on the verge of not voting? There's one of my very good friends who I found out did not vote in the last election. And I was heartbroken. I was like, you ain't vote for Obama? Like we've been, you know, so just having those conversations, I think, are even more important than any of the canvassing stuff I do. Just kind of getting, making sure my people are have the knowledge to make a decision, like whether they vote or whatever. But if you're going to be my friend, you're going to know what I know. And I want to know what you know. We ain't going to be walking around here ignorant. And you're my friend. I'm going to let you know. And I don't have, you know, and that's one thing I've had to learn to do is to learn to be okay with being uncomfortable and standing up and advocating and being forceful, in my opinion, and not do the, well, you know, I kind of want to end this conversation, so I'm going to agree. Like, no, I don't fucking agree with you. You are wrong. You're whatever, you know. So that's kind of my evolution politically. And I'm just constantly trying to get more knowledge. I read a ton of political and themes and stuff and other stuff to try to get my, to try to understand sort of where we've been in this country, because nothing that's happening is new. That's one great thing about being 40. If you live long enough, the same shit will happen eventually and you'll go through it again. And then, you know, the next time you go through it, you will be prepared. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely important to become involved in some capacity and, you know, just do something. Don't just sit there, right?
Yeah. So, get off your ass.
Right.
As one of my, never mind.
So as we wrap up, first of all, this has really been a great experience just to sit and talk to you. And even though we've known each other for so long, it's always encouraging to find out something new about somebody who we consider ourselves close with. So I appreciate the opportunity of being able to talk to you. So we're going to have somewhat of a speed round. I don't know how well you do with stuff like this, but okay. you're going to learn today, right? All right. So here we go. Right.
Okay.
So you and I have had a chance to travel to a few places. We've been to Las Vegas together, Miami together, Montreal together. Mm-hmm. What would be your ideal vacation?
Oh, with my family or you or with my friends?
Period.
Probably Nigeria, because I want to go to an African country and I took Ancestry DNA and they said I'm from Nigeria. So I want to go to Nigeria really bad.
So your ancestors are now?
Yeah. So that would probably be. And so I'm sort of making tentative plans to do that eventually with my family. So that would be ideal.
Do they know?
Yeah. Hell yeah. Ooh, they know.
Okay.
They're going to learn today.
All right. So, spinning up a little bit faster, we're going to play One Gotta Go. You know this game? Yes, he does. Okay, here we go. All right, check this out. One Gotta Go. You mentioned Ninja Turtles. Raphael, Donatello, Michelangelo, Leonardo.
Michelangelo. He was worthless.
He was worthless.
Nunchucks. Nunchucks, by the way, aren't even a real weapon. I think
you've never been hit by nunchucks.
No, but I mean, the other guys had giant knives and a big ass stick. Like, nunchucks, they ain't gonna do nothing.
All right.
And okay. He was goofy. He was high half the time.
Okay.
Pizza. He was high.
True. All right. TV shows. Sticking with Ninja Turtles, A Different World, Cosby Show, Fresh Prince.
Oh, one's gotta go.
One's gotta go, sir.
Say it again. Say it again.
Ninja Turtles, A Different World.
Oh, Cosby Ninja Turtles. Show.
Ninja Turtles. Okay.
Yeah, Ninja Turtles gotta go.
All right. Music genre, R&B, gospel, hip hop, reggae.
That's a tough one. Hip hop. R&B, close second.
Ooh, I might never talk to you again. All right. Food, mac and cheese, cornbread, collard greens, candy yams.
Mac and cheese, no doubt. Even though I'm lactose intolerant, yeah, I got to go with mac and cheese.
It's got to go?
No, oh, sorry. Yeah, duh, Jason. The ones that got to go, yams? Because I'm going to probably get dessert anyway, so I don't need it doing my meal. So, yeah, we'll do yams.
Okay. All right. Comedians, Kevin Hart, Jamie Foxx, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock.
Oh, that's dirty. And
if they go, their entire history and catalog of work is gone.
I want to say Jamie Foxx, but like his last special that was like 20 years ago is like great.
Their entire body of work, not just them on stand up.
That's not fair. I can't Life lose Ray. I'm a have to say my man Kevin, because Dave Chappelle's a genius. Chris Rock, he's like my role model. So sorry, Kev.
Okay. So that concludes rough. The one gotta go speed round.
Yeah.
What is your legacy? What do you want your legacy to be?
I said a little bit earlier, I want my legacy to partially be my kids and, you know, what they throw back into the universe. I want to make this planet, my community, a better place. I want, but you know, that's not all I'm about. Like, I want to, honestly, the podcast, I want that can be part of my legacy as well. It's to like really know not just the serious part of Jason, is to know the goofier, the fun, the passionate side of Jason, because that's really in a nutshell who I am. So yeah.
Sounds good. All right. Do you have any parting words for anybody who's watching this or listening to this or might have any questions? Do you have anything that you want to share with the world that we haven't discussed?
Sure. Vote in November for Biden. That's it. There is no other choice. Point blank, period.
All right. Well, appreciate you joining. And looking forward to talking to you more on the Black Light Podcast.
And we're done.
Yeah.
How was that?
Horrible.